Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono.
You don't have anything. You can't escape. Take the sack, live to play another down, and move on.
49ers Extra is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. Coming up, we'll talk about the 49ers' 26-23 win in overtime against the Seahawks. But first, I want to tell you about our favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Well, Steve, the 49ers in the last two games have doubled their win total. They now have four wins, and they win their second straight game, a thriller against the Seahawks, 26-23 in overtime, and they snapped the 10-game losing streak that they had against the Seahawks. What a load off their minds now, right?
Yeah. Gosh, that's amazing. Somewhere they mentioned that the 10 games had included the NFC Championship game, I think.
Right?
Yeah, which I hadn't really thought about that it had gone back that far. Anyway, that's off your mind. I don't have to worry about that. I'll check that box. but you know what? They played their best game, I think, in all three phases, offense, defense, special teams, and figured out a way to win the game. Now, different than numerous other weeks this season, statistically, we were beaten for the most part. But we made a huge, I guess two huge plays. Well, obviously, a run back, you know, for a touchdown, kickoff return for a touchdown. And then, you know, Robbie Gould field goal at the end.
Yeah, I mean that return by Richie James Jr., you had to feel great for him because he'd been struggling as a punt returner. They took him out of the role because he had fumbled some of those. He had muffed some of those, yeah. And then, you know, he returns this one. And he shows off his speed.
Right, but and he muffed the first one though.
On the kick, yeah.
On the kickoff, the first kickoff.
Right.
And I happened to be in earshot somewhere in the stadium of. Actually, may have been in the men's room because they have the radio broadcast piped in there, and Tim Ryan was saying, "Gosh, you know, we probably just don't even field kickoffs anymore. Just take the ball at the 25 and move on. There's, you know, we don't have to worry about a penalty. We don't have to worry about muffed catches. Just." And then he fields the next one and takes it to the house. I thought that was pretty timely.
Yeah, well, you know, it had been since 2013 that the 49ers hadn't beaten the Seahawks, but it had been even longer since they got a special teams touchdown. 2011, Ted Ginn against the Seahawks on a kickoff return and a punt return for a touchdown, I guess, in that game.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was the first game of the Jim Harbaugh era, so... But that's a long time without a special teams touchdown.
Yeah, it is. Back to Marty Schottenheimer. You know, offense, don't screw it up. Defense will win the ball game. Special teams will score a touchdown for us.
Yeah, you win the game on a field goal by a guy who is so reliable in Robbie Gould. Oh. I mean, we don't really talk about him much, but that's because he never misses. This guy, he's made 52 of his last 53. He's made 68 of 71 as a 49er. I just hadn't really looked at that because you just figure, oh, he's always going to make it.
I know. He's really good. And, you know, and I actually, when, you know, when they set up to kick it, and I'm like, oh God, you know, this is one of those ones where there's probably a greater chance that he misses it. I mean, even though he's spectacular,
right?
Just that situation, you know, that kind of. But no,
wind and rain. It was windy and rainy.
Windy and rainy, and just you know, hadn't really been in that situation in a while. But it was money.
And Janikowski missed an extra point earlier, which really kind of cost them the game. You think about it.
Yeah, and that. That I think that kick was to the south end, if I remember correctly, and that's where, you know, when it's raining, that's where the wind, you know, that's where the storms usually are coming from, on the south end of the stadium. So, in Santa Clara, that is. So yeah, he was, I think, kicking right into the wind. But we played our most complete game. You know, defense played a full game again. Offense ran the ball when they had to run the ball, and used up some clock.
Well, defense definitely came through down the stretch, too, because, I mean, the Seahawks couldn't really do much near the end of the game. When it really mattered, that's when the 49ers came through, I thought.
Yeah, they did. No question. And when I was looking at the stat sheet, and you know, again, I guess the biggest thing that I was pointing to was, I think the Niners were 3-for-10 on third down. But they got five first downs. I don't know how many of them were in third down. They got five first downs by penalty.
Yeah, they definitely were helped a lot by penalties, no doubt.
Yeah, and the Seahawks were 9-for-18, 9-for-19 on third down, I mean, which is really good. That many third down conversions. But to your point, when the 49ers needed a stop, they got one. And actually, a few times, what really helped, and I thought he had a really good game, was Solomon Thomas. He drew two key holding penalties on big plays at the end of the game. There was another one during the game somewhere, too, that I remember. You know, those penalties came at critical times.
Yeah, no, that was big, and it's great to see him playing better. It's also really good to see DeForest Buckner having the kind of season he is. I mean, he had a couple of sacks, yeah. And now he has 11. That's a career high for him this season.
Yeah, well, and I think the biggest thing that's helped him was they didn't substitute as much, because someone like Solly, he's got a motor. He gets better as he's playing more snaps in a row. And the other thing was he played more on the inside, more in a playing kind of a three technique, what the offensive lineman or defense lineman would refer to as a three technique, kind of playing on the outside shoulder of the guard. So I think that really helped. I think that helped him. I think it helped all of them along the line, because they played the same spot consistently.
49ers Extra continues right after this. There's more to tell you about as far as my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. 49ers fans from outside the Bay Area, listen up. TPC Harding Park has a great deal for you when you are planning your trip to Levi's Stadium to see the 49ers. While you're in town, take advantage of Golf the Gridiron, featuring discounted tee times and free club rentals. Visit tpc.com and click on Special Offers for tee time deals at San Francisco's own TPC Harding Park. Here's what 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan had to say about Nick Mullins and his job as the starter the rest of the season.
Nick deserves to be in. Nick's played his... played very good, and he's gotten better as he's gone. I thought yesterday was probably Nick's best game, and especially the way he finished it in that fourth quarter. And not all. We didn't complete a lot of balls, but just him getting rid of the ball on some really tough protection situations and being able to get that one to Dante at the end, which was very tough to get off. Mingo had a speed on the right side, and to get us off is, to me, they don't call PI a lot if you don't throw it to him. When we missed a Will Free safety pickup that he threw to Bourne on third down, that was just unbelievable. It ended up slipping out of Bourne's hands, but it was a hell of a play. No, he's done too good of a job, and we'd love to get CJ more playing time, but Nick's earned it, and I'm not taking him out.
Let's talk about Nick Mullins and the offense and the quarterback position and all that stuff. I mean, I thought Nick had a really good game. You know, to me, he's just so easy to root for. It's fun to see his development. He's looking more and more to me like a solid backup. I mean, he seems to, I don't know, Steve, maybe I'm just imagining, but seems like he has more zip on his fastball than he did before. Is that right?
I can't really tell so much from the stands, and he's an accurate passer. He did take some hits again Sunday, where he's kind of gets stuck at the top of his drop, but it's also several of them not his fault. He's trying to get rid of the ball because has people bearing down on him. But he sees things well. He moves the ball around well. Distributing it to different receivers. And I go back to ball's delivered on time. It's a catchable ball. It's accurate. He's playing really well. I mean, again, he was, 20 for 30 or somewhere in there?
20 for 29, yeah.
Kyle would take that every day of the week. You know, 20 for 30, 275, 300 yards a game. I mean, that's a great day at the office. That's a consistent day at the office and a very good day.
And that's why he said what he said. I mean, Kyle Shanahan saying that, you know, Nick deserves to be in there now. I mean, he's not going to make a change back to CJ because Mullins has played well enough. He deserves to be in there.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's earned the right to be there, and I think that the guys have responded to him. Again, I'll go back to, obviously, Kittle's been most consistent all season, but Pettis is. He's good. He's going to be really good. Bourne, he's getting more playing time, and he's getting better. I've kind of talked about him all season that I think he's going to be pretty good. Taylor, he's been consistent, although he's had a few drops that are unusual for him the last couple games. But offensively they're playing better, and they're running the ball really well. 41 Wilson.
His name Wilson. Yeah, he had the fumble, Wilson. But other than that,
on the replay in the stadium. He kind of turned his body to get the wrong shoulder to protect himself. You know what I mean? He kind of turned into the tackler instead of turning away from him. But boy, he runs hard. And I think he seems to be a nice changeup to Breida.
Yeah, and I really like Breida, as we've talked about before.
Yeah, and they both like them both, and they both seem to catch the ball well out of the backfield and run hard, and then Breida can, his explosion is very good.
You know, there's so many ups and downs, I guess, just with young players. I mean, you think about Bourne, he made a nice catch over the middle, but then there was another one where it just went right through his hands.
Yeah.
You see that with the young guys. We've talked about that with Pettis too.
You do, and you're going to see it, and then you're also going to see it. We talked about late, this time of the year, man. They're running on those young bucks that played college football last year. They're running on fumes. Trying to survive a 16 game season. I think they're playing well, and I think they've worked well with Mullins.
Here's the other thing about Mullins, too, that when he misses a play, and you could relate to this, Steve, I mean, especially when you were a young quarterback, he missed Kittle a couple of times, especially that one that would have been a touchdown. He recovers from it. He doesn't let it bother him. I mean, they had a great drive right after that one where he just totally overthrew Kittle. He was wide open. It would have been a touchdown. He misses him, but they have their longest drive of the season after that. They went 10 plays, 98 yards. They had the Celek touchdown right after that.
Yeah. And that's a great quality for a quarterback. Something I couldn't do. He is able to shake it off and move on to the next play, which is a tremendous quality. He must have learned it from this Southern Mississippi former quarterback Brett Favre, who could do it really well.
Right, he's wearing the same number. We're in number four.
Yeah.
Now, here's one thing that can be debated. I mean, Richard Sherman, you know, you're getting excited about Mullins. He says he could be a starter for a lot of teams in the NFL. Now, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, the starters are really good in the NFL. I think he's a really good backup. I don't know about being a starter full time.
Yeah, there's a lot more that comes with being the guy. I mean, you have to be able to, you know, wear that weight on your shoulders. Having done both, it's not easy. And maybe he can be. I hope he at some point in his career that he is a 4 or 5 year starter for someone. You never know. And like I said, he very, very well may be able to handle that. We don't know. He just continue doing what you're doing, and all will be good. All will be good for you going forward in the NFL.
Yeah.
I get that everybody wants to be the starter, and but you know, there's a lot to be said for being around for a longer period of time in the NFL.
Absolutely,
if that makes sense. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the offseason. I don't know if. I don't know if they decide to keep all three guys, which probably is not a bad idea, but I don't know if you can, I don't know what contract situation is for CJ or for Mullins, and whether they could pay all three of them. You know, they're probably both probably just making rookie minimum or
right.
Second year, third year minimum. So
as an undrafted guy too, I mean, that's
exactly
pretty surprising,
but, no, he's played really well and he's been, I think he's been enjoyable to hear in some of the interviews and his inclusion of coaches and other players on the team and fans and organization in his post game, interviews.
Yeah, and you can't take away from him the fact that he's won some games here, and he's been really good against the Seahawks. How about his 689 yards? I love this note. This was actually Eric Branch in the San Francisco Chronicle pointed out. 689 yards against the Seahawks, most that Seattle is allowed to a quarterback in a season in franchise history. They started in 1976. So guys like Ken Stabler, John Elway, Dan Fouts, Kurt Warner were on the list. Mullins has more yards than those guys against Seattle.
How come I wasn't on the list? I played against them twice a year in the AFC West.
You must have been close.
Yeah, it must not have been very good.
Well, these guys had over 600. Let's see. Yeah, 650.
I was playing for Shotzi, so we probably ran the ball 40 times.
You ran the ball a lot, right?
20. Yeah.
And that actually leads me to my next thing. And by the way, Schottenheimer was the offensive coordinator for his son is the offensive coordinator for Seattle. But that leads me to Shanahan and his schemes, because I am more and more impressed by how these receivers are getting open. Steve, what are you seeing? I mean, especially the tight ends. We've talked about Kittle all year, but Celek was getting open too. I mean, some of these schemes that he has are just great.
They are good, and I think one of the ways that, you know, something that his goes back to maybe his dad, and what he, you know, what we did a lot under his father Mike was, you know, moving lots of movement, lots of motion, pre-snap. Gives the quarterback an idea of man or zone, and then it allows. And when I say motion that he continues to move. He doesn't end up getting stationary to allow somebody to get in his face. Motion again to see man or zone, and then give the receiver an advantage of having a defensive back trail him, or having, if they're playing zone, someone backing off, you know, as the motion happens, you know, they switch and go, you know, from a cover four one way to a cover three the other way, and things like that. And he did it actually a number of times with there were a couple of plays where I thought were pretty neat, where he motioned the receiver in what we would call a round, where he came, you know, around the back through the backfield, and then they made it look like it was going to be a run. There was a play action fake to it, but then he ended up, and it was a play action pass, people downfield, but then he ended up throwing it to the back who kind of came right out of his fake and then swung it to the outside. I know we're talking about the receivers, but just the whole movement piece of it.
Sure. Get it to Breida or Wilson or, yeah.
Exactly. You know, makes people have to either bump over in zone or run along with him in man. And it puts the offense at an advantage.
Yeah. Well, here's a play that I watched a few times. Actually, I kept going back to watch it. It was third down and a foot, and they had an I formation. So you're thinking run. I mean, everybody is.
Yeah.
And they completely fooled Bobby Wagner, one of the best linebackers in the league. George Kittle was left wide open for 21 yards. They passed it, a play action out of a third and a foot. I just love that play. I mean, you know,
right,
really fools the defense.
Yeah, I do remember the play, but I can't remember where. I remember the, you know, him catching and making the yardage, but I forget, did he come from the backside, or did he come from the front side and kind of snuck inside and then came out?
I think he snuck inside and then came out, and Bobby Wagner was, you know, biting on maybe
Bobby
a run
Wagner
play.
had bit on the run. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. I really love that play.
Yeah. No, I mean, Kyle, he's doing a really good, I mean, they're doing a nice job of mixing it up. And again, it, you know, it all comes back to that the running game is first, and it's going to open up the passing game.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, so I love the way he mixes it up. He did, in my opinion, make a mistake, though. He didn't take a timeout at the end of the half. Seattle ended up running out the clock, but the 49ers had a couple of timeouts, and he waited until like 9 seconds, and then he called one. I just thought, okay, you could still have a good drive here, but he just didn't do it. I mean, he just didn't take a timeout there, if you remember that.
Yeah, I don't. I do remember them just taking a knee. Or no, that was at the end. I'm sorry, they took a knee at the end with a little bit of time.
Right. At the end of the half, yeah, I just thought he could have called a timeout. 49ers could have got the ball back, but didn't do it.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. No, I don't remember that. I probably would feel the same way you do. You know, especially when there's minute and a half on the clock, you know, they're the offense is backed up, and yeah, you know, take a timeout, make them punt the ball and see what kind of field position we get.
Well, a couple of big picture things I wanted to talk about before we finish up here. One is that with the win, the 49ers went from the number one pick to the number four pick. So I know fans are kind of in tune with that. The players aren't. Even Kyle Shanahan, he's not thinking about that.
But
I know a lot of fans are because they're thinking, oh, man, our draft pick went to number four. But you got to finish strong, right? I mean, you were talking about that last week, how much you'd like to see the Niners try to win, you know, at least a few of these games. And now they've beaten two playoff contenders in a row. They got two more coming up, in the Bears and the Rams.
I mean, I'd much rather see us be 6-10 and, you know, have a number 15 pick, I'm guessing, you know, as opposed to being 2-14 and have the number one pick. And I said to a few people, they, you know, as I was visiting suites during the game, that the number one pick to me right now with the current situation of the 49ers is I'm going to say it's scary to me right now. And the reason is that the number one pick's got to be paid a certain amount of money that's slotted, you know, and it's not going to be a quarterback. Okay. It's not going to be a quarterback. You've already paid Jimmy G.
Yeah.
It's most likely not going to be another defensive lineman because they picked three in a row before last year.
Right.
Could be an offensive lineman, you know, if there is another McGlinchey out there.
Yeah, and he's good. You know, that was a good pick, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it could be the next, you know, hopefully the next Joe Staley. But I don't know if that person is coming out of college or not. The other spot or position, you know, it could be a Barkley, Saquon Barkley. You know,
yeah, he's
if
good.
if there's a once in a, or I'm going to say a once in a generation guy like him, I don't know if that person is coming. I don't know if there's another one of him coming out of college this year. You know, and it could be a Jerry Rice, if there is one, but most likely it's not going to be any of those spots that I mentioned. So if we had the first pick, I would be, in my mind, if I were John Lynch, I'd be thinking the whole offseason, how do I trade this pick to get two more?
Yeah, because, you know, it's not that big of a deal to have that pick, right?
It's not that big of a, I guess that's the bottom line. It's not that big of a deal, I don't think. We need more body. We need more good bodies, you know, not one great body, I'll say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, we can use, you know, we can always use more defensive backs. We can always use more linebackers. We can use more offensive linemen, defensive linemen. That's a pretty good group. Pretty, you know, that's really young.
More receivers.
You can always use more receivers. Right. Yeah, I mean, but you're not going to spend a first pick on any of those that I mentioned.
I agree. I completely agree with that. And it's good to see them trying to finish on a winning note like they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, if we win two more and end up at 6-10, I would have said at the beginning of the year, and I may even have said, okay, 6-10 is it's on the lower end of expectation, but considering everything that happened,
yeah, without Garoppolo,
six and ten is, I think 6-10 is awesome.
I know, especially if they finish strong against these teams that they're playing.
Yeah, these two teams. I mean, both, you know, top in the NFC. So that's what I would be looking for, and you got a lot of guys, a lot of young guys, experience. I mean, you now have a very experienced backup. You got two young receivers that pretty much played every down for the last four or five games of the season. You know, it's kind of the same in the secondary. The young man, I think his name is Moore, defensive back.
Yeah.
That came in for I think he substituted for Witherspoon.
Yeah, because Witherspoon went down with an injury, and he's out now.
Yeah, came and made two really nice plays at the end of the game.
Yeah, you know, he did.
I didn't know much about him, other than thinking to myself, well, geez, here's another young guy that's getting a little bit of experience that is only going to benefit him and benefit the team next year.
Yeah, no, I think this time of the year is important for that.
Yeah.
There was one other big picture thing I wanted to ask you about before we finish up, and you know it has to do with the officials and replay. And I know we've talked a lot about it, but it just feels like they just take so long to get things done. You know, I was covering the Giants Titans game in New York, and in that game, there were so many times where the officials just took a long time to decide whether or not the play was going to be looked at, and by the time they looked at it and everything, and it just really slows everything down. And it seems like that should be a concern for the NFL. Just the viewing audience is probably going to have a problem with this, don't you think? Or they are.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I'm thinking of the young man's name from the Eagles last or 2 weeks ago, and he said, "Are they drinking in New York?"
It seems like it. They're just slow to react. Yeah.
On that one that was a definite fumble in the New Orleans Philly game.
Yeah.
Anyway, it does take forever. But there was a comment. Might have been Tim Ryan or I don't know. I was listening to the end of the game. I left the game and made it home in time to watch the overtime, but was listening to it on the way home. And there was a not necessarily a replay, but a play that was confirmed. It was called a completion or an incompletion. I don't remember which one it was, but then Tim Ryan or Ted Robinson commented that was confirmed from New York by the replay official without the official on the field going to the tent.
They did. Okay. Yeah.
So I didn't know if that was, I had never heard a comment about that. So I didn't know if that was something new or that's always been a part of the replay, which I think, now with technology, I mean, they can see those replays so quickly. Why couldn't, I mean, if you're going to go to somebody in New York or someone, even someone in the stadium, an official in the press box.
Yeah. Well, the New York style, that's baseball. Baseball goes.
I mean, they don't have to go to New York. It can be, in my mind, it should be somebody in the stadium.
I agree. Somebody separate who's already watching it. Yeah.
That somebody's already watching. There's 23 cameras in the stadium or 26 cameras.
They could determine it fast.
Just without even, just have the official, hold the play for 15 seconds. And listen in the ear to the guy in the press box saying, okay, it was called a catch. It's confirmed a catch. Go. That kind of thing.
Right.
Whereas as opposed to calling timeout, the official has to go over to the monitor, look at it, look at every angle. They could have an official in the box doing that for them already.
Yeah. I just think it could be so much faster. It's just really slow.
Yeah.
And they're also, I think the officials are kind of looking to throw flags. There's just all these emphasis, points of emphasis that they're worried about. And I mean, when you get to the point where Wilson flips the ball and it hits a Seahawk, and that's a personal foul. I don't know if you saw that.
Right.
He flipped the ball in the air and it hit
right.
It hit the guy on the jersey, and it's like personal foul. It's like, man.
Yeah. and it looked to me like he was either just flipping in there or trying to flip it to the official.
Right, and he got a personal foul for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that did not seem there didn't seem intent there to do that.
No, they've got to take a look at this. It's just, as a viewing audience, I think it's really kind of disturbing how long it takes and how many penalties, and they need to move the game along a little bit quicker. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, there were, what did Seattle have, like 15 penalties, 14 penalties?
They had a ton, yeah. I mean, that might have been their season high for penalties in a game.
I mean,
14 for 148 yards.
That's not the oof. So, I mean, that's not a good sign for a team that's, most likely they'll be in the playoffs. I think I think they're, what, 8-6 now?
They yeah, win. They just needed to win one game. If they had won on Sunday, they would have been in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're almost in. All right, Steve, we'll look forward to talking about this Bears game that's coming up Sunday. Talk to you next week about that. I appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks, Joe.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. We're going to join you on Christmas Day next Tuesday to talk about the 49ers-Bears game on Sunday at Levi's Stadium. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to 49ers Extra on thesportsvirus.com.